Racing Lambo, it's a whole new game.
Welcome to Lombardi's Legends Podcast. This is Wags, and with me as always is Dane. Today we are going to talk D-line. We're going to continue with our position-by-position reviews of last season, and also a little look ahead to what we expect to happen with each position group. And so this will be a fun one because, Dane, I think as a former star high school D lineman, you have some special insights with this group.
Yeah, thanks for the praise. That is not accurate, but thank you, Eggs. I tried hard. So today, I mean, looking at this, this list of D linemen, I mean, let's just dig right in. Kenny Clark, man, he's getting paid to be one of the best D linemen in football, but there's something that they must like. I mean, does he take his Wheaties in December? Kenny Clark, when the games really start to matter, when it gets cold outside, when I think that other teams might be a little run down, Kenny Clark seems to just, like, kick it into another gear, and I thought he did so again this season, and he's really our anchor of the defensive line, and in the middle of the defense, Kenny Clark, I thought, once again, brought it, especially the second half of the season.
Certainly, he had some injuries that he was battling, and that's going to be the biggest thing, I think, for Kenny when we assess performance, because health is a skill. We need him to be out on the field every week as part of, as you said, anchoring that defensive line. If he's not out there, it's going to be a significant loss. And granted, it wasn't like he missed half the season, but it's something that, you know, if he can – make sure to get his back in great shape and just keep himself as healthy as possible. There is an element of luck involved. I do understand that when it comes to injuries. But so I think that contributed a little bit to, I don't want to say a slower start for Kenny this year, but it wasn't necessarily, I don't think, quite the monster season we saw from him a year ago. But you're absolutely right. He definitely kicked it in later in the season. And you can see, even though he's not going to lead the team in tackles from his position, the way that the Packers defense improved in the second half of the season, I don't think there's a coincidence at all with the play of Kenny Clark. And particularly their improvement in the run defense was a significant factor, I think, in the way the Packers defense was able to perform for much of the second half of the season. And you've got to get a lot of credit to Big Kenny Clark up the middle. He was soaking up a lot of blockers, and he commands a lot of attention. And he's one of the few guys in the league that can push his guys out of the way and get pressure on the quarterback in passing situations as well.
No doubt about it. And, you know, as much as we talk about Kenny, you know, as we're looking at this position from, 2020, after Kenny Clark, there was a little bit of injury, but really this was a position that I think the Packers were truly trying to upgrade throughout the season. And we'll touch on them all, but Billy Winn, you know, was added. You know, we added Anthony Rush and some guys that we've already come to know on the defensive line. Montrevious Adams was really a non-factor once again. I think that this is probably it for Montrevious in Green Bay. You know, another injury-plagued season. And, you know, Tyler Lancaster, Dean Lowry, Kingsley Keke. I mean, Wags, we can talk about all these guys, but I really did think it was Kenny Clark. And then I think probably next in line here from a production standpoint would be Kingsley Keke, who for a guy who we drafted in the sixth round in 2019, he showed some serious flashes, particularly in the pass rush. He had four sacks this year. They came in bunches. He had two in one game, two in another, but was able to get after the quarterback, dealt with some injuries late in the season. But are you as encouraged as I am in what Kingsley was able to do in year two? Because you can't necessarily rely on six-round picks and think that they're going to be starters in the NFL, but I thought that at times, in pass rush situations in particular, Kingsley Keke showed the optimism of the Packers when they drafted him.
Yeah, and it, again, going back to the injuries we talked about with Kenny Clark, the second half, unfortunately, Kiki wasn't able to really be out there much, if at all, and kind of ended the season inactive for the last few weeks of the season, or even maybe even the last 4 weeks of the season, if I remember correctly. So, but you're right. He showed some flashes, particularly early in the season. One of the things that he's going to have to continue to prove upon is staying in his lane. And, you know, as a young player, a lot of times you want to make a name for yourself. And I'm not going to take anything away from him getting those sacks and pressures, because you always want to get that whenever you can, up the middle from the interior defensive lineman. So if he can continue to improve upon that, I think he could really contribute in a very specialized role. An area where he needs to improve is in the run defense. However, there are some times that I think he got himself a little out of position. And we need someone, it could be Kingsley next year if he continues to improve at the rate that he did in year two, to really be that anchor next to Kenny Clark. And I'm not saying that we need to have two Kenny Clarks in the middle. It'd be great to have. If Kiki can improve in that area, that would be a significant boon for this defense. Realistically, Dane, you touched on, it's asking a lot to have a sixth-round pick at the defensive line be a starter in the league. And I think Kiki can do it. He proved that he can. But at the same time, with the level of play that he's at currently, and I do expect him to continue to improve, I would like to see someone added to this group. And I think the Packers, you touched on that as well, were looking all throughout this season, and I think they're going to continue to look in this offseason for ways to upgrade this position group. Because after that, we've got some guys that, come to work every Sunday, and Tyler Lancaster and Dean Lowry. But I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure that either of them are necessarily going to have a role on this team going into next season. So let's kind of talk about them a little bit. Dean Lowry, a lot of folks are already projecting could be designated as a post-June 1st cut, would save the Packers $4.8 million against the cap. And for his level of play, I don't think we're getting a $6 million player on the defensive line. So it makes a lot of sense that they might move on from Dean. He didn't have a terrible season. It's just, being on the outside of that defensive line group, you would like to see guys making a little bit more of an impact week to week.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Dean. There's a place for him in the league, and he's probably a starter in the league for a number of teams. The thing is not a $6.3 million, right? I mean, if you're getting him for $2.5 million, that's a good deal, and you're going to be happy with the production level at that cost. But I think it's not necessarily Dean the player, it's Dean the cost and production level. So I think he will not be with the Packers. I would agree with you, going into 2021 season. Tyler Lancaster is a little more interesting to me. I think that he probably remains with the team because of his run stopping ability, but I do think he's probably maxed out his potential. He is the quintessential hardworking guy who, lunch pail goes and just battles every day. But with all due respect to Tyler, I think that he'd be more productive, and the defense overall probably be more productive if he's getting 20 snaps a game and not 40. I'm looking to see him. I think that he's still under contract. I think he's going to probably have to earn a spot on the roster. But this is a position group, Wags, where I think the Packers are really going to look to improve. We'll talk draft down the road, but I'll tell you what, this is really one of my priority spots for this Packers defense is along the defensive line. Because I think that with Kenny, we're close. I'll just put it that way. We're close defensively overall. I really like the young inside linebackers. I love our pass rushers. Our DBs, we're getting there. Our safeties are incredible. I think we'll improve in the back end, but we're really close. And I think another impact along with Kenny Clark, and by impact, I mean capital I impact player along this defensive line, will make this defense go from one that was trending the right way near the end of the season to one that can be a dominant force. Because we all know controlling the line of scrimmage, it doesn't matter if you're playing Pee Wee football or if you're at the NFL level, if you can control the line of scrimmage, you're winning more games than not on the defense. So, you know, as we look ahead, we talked about Tyler Lancaster a little bit there. Dean, you know, again, think he's probably going to be gone. But then we brought in guys like Snacks Harrison, who no longer at the all-pro level, didn't really get a chance, I don't think, to play an awful lot of snaps. He's a free agent again. I got to tell you, Wags, I'm thinking it's less and less likely he's going to return. I think we're going to see a bit of a youth movement or maybe a splash free agent signing that I think we'll get to here in a moment. But, you know, as we look to him, I think Anthony Rush is also another guy who we brought in. I really like Anthony. I think that he's going to have a chance to earn a spot as well. Billy Wynn, free agent, showed some flashes. Got injured, unfortunately. He had a heck of a comeback, hadn't played in a few seasons, and I thought had some batted down passes and a couple impact plays. But overall, Wags, I think that this is a defense that defensive line that was predicated on the explosiveness of Kenny Clark, and then we've got some other guys that are looking to earn roster spots, but maybe not anybody else other than Kenny that's really that splash player.
Yeah, I agree, and no disrespect to Tyler Lancaster, but I look at him as someone that's going to need to earn a roster spot next year. We need to bring in enough guys that can upgrade this position that not only is he not getting 40 snaps a game, but he may not even be getting any snaps, and he's just, perhaps he's your fifth guy, and he's your depth.
Right.
But, you know, we've also got Willington Prevalon, who was injured.
Good
put on the IR. They drafted him, the kid out of Rutgers. So I think there's ways to improve this position group. I would think they might be able to. Billy Wynn seemed like he was very popular in the locker room and a lot of praise from some of the coaching staff and some of his teammates. So he's not going to be an expensive guy to bring into camp. So maybe he gets another chance. I don't know if we know enough about Rush to know if the Packers try to bring him back or not. But the key is we need to beef up the level of competition on this defensive line. I think they're going to draft. I wouldn't be surprised when we talk about the draft if the Packers, you know, take a D lineman pretty early in the draft. So this is a key group, I think, for me this offseason. We've cycled through a lot of names and, none of them, in my opinion, have a guaranteed path back to the roster. I agree with you on Montrevious Adams, by the way. I was shocked that he made the team this year, to be honest with you. I didn't think he was going to make this team this year, and he hasn't really shown anything in his entire tenure in Green Bay to show why the Packers would invest in bringing him back at this point as well.
So, Joe Barry, new defensive coordinator here, that's, I guess, the other question mark, right, is what's the function of the defensive line under a new defensive coordinator? I got to think it's going to be similar, but time will tell. I would love to see some kind of investment along this line, the defensive line, because if you look at the roster overall, we have one of the best offenses in the league. Are there places to improve? Absolutely. But on the defensive side, I think that the glaring spots is at the cornerback position with Kevin King. He will not be returning, I don't think, to Green Bay. So that corner spot opposite of Jair and then really it's this defensive line. I think those are the two places where the Packers are looking to upgrade. So, Wags, as we talk about upgrades, and I know we'll be doing free agency later, but the elephant in the room is big number 99, Wisconsin native J.J. Watt. We got to go there. He's a free agent. He's not the guy maybe he was when he was defensive player of the year, but doesn't this feel a little bit like it could be a Julius Peppers style situation where you're getting a guy who can still give you serious snaps and just absolutely disrupt and be the impact player that you need him to be?
Yes, the problem is going to be the financial. That's going to be a little bit tricky. J.J. Watt, it appears, has Probably almost every team in the league has interest. I know there are a lot of reports out there that about around a dozen teams are seriously interested in adding J.J. Watt. So, you know, he's going to command quite a bit of attention. And we're jumping in. Certainly, just so you know, folks, J.J. Watt was released by the Texans, meaning he can sign with anyone right now. So while free agency hasn't officially kicked off yet, and we didn't talk free agency in that running back pod in terms of outside free agents, since J.J. is available right now, it makes sense to talk about him. It's going to be interesting to see what it would take to sign him. I know a lot of people like to think that maybe we could get a hometown discount. Maybe that's possible. I don't think that's probably going to happen, but you know, you never know. All things being equal, though, the Packers are going to have to at least be in the ballpark order to play with JJ here. And so, what's it going to take, Dane? Let's throw some numbers out there. Would you be willing to pay a guy like JJ Watt at this stage of his career? $15 million plus a year. Is that the amount of money that he's going to be commanding? So that's the question here. So I ask you, what do you think about that in terms of a financial impact?
Well, that's the thing, right? From the heart of us, I mean, Wisconsin fans too, it would be incredible to see J.J. Watt in green and gold. If his number, though, I mean, this is the thing. You said it right, Wags. It's a money issue. If we brought in J.J. Watt, does that mean then that, you know, would fans prefer Aaron Jones or J.J. Watt? Would fans prefer Corey Linsley or J.J. Watt? Would Packer fans prefer to, you know, actually Patrick Peterson, cornerback, is a free agent? Can you imagine pairing Jaire Alexander with Patrick Peterson? You can go down the list and start talking, but these are the difficult decisions that a team like the Packers are going to need to make, in a year where a lot of teams in the NFL have salary cap issues. The Packers are no different than a lot of teams in the league. So, Wegg, that's the thing, is it's a priority thing, and I'm gonna be honest, and this is not gonna be a popular, opinion probably for a lot of Packer fans, but I worry about J.J. Watt's injury history. I'm not looking for a guy that's name. I'm looking for a guy who's got game, and I know Watt still has some game, but I don't want to sink a bunch of money and rob Peter to pay Paul a little bit here across the Packers roster. So if you ask me right now, would you rather have J.J. Watt or Corey Linsley back and it's comparable prices, I'm thinking hard about Corey Linsley. And you know that I'm not big into paying offensive linemen that are past 30 years old a lot of money. But my point being that there is something to be said about continuity with a tried and true proven record. And I know the Packers need to get better on the defense. And I love J.J. Watt, but man, if we're talking $15 million a year, and I know you're throwing that number out, but if that's what it takes, I am not comfortable with the Packers investing in a guy, with his injury history. I don't care what his name is or what he's done in the past, because it's not doing us any good if J.J. plays three games and then he's not playing anymore and we've sunk a ton of money in. Now, if we get a sweetheart deal and a hometown discount, and I know that's a lot to ask and I know that's probably not realistic, now we're talking. Because what I want to do is I want to see the Packers retool and add talent across the board. They don't all need to be huge name guys, but we need to add talent both
in
the draft and free agency. Yeah.
Dan, sorry to interrupt, but what's the sweetheart number? What is that number for you?
I don't even know, Wags. It's lower than it's an embarrassingly low number, probably. We're talking $5 or $6 million a year.
Not going to happen. So let me throw it this year. I'm on the other side. I don't know that I agree with you. I look at J.J. Watt can still be an impact player. Maybe not to the level he was as a player of the year, defensive player of the year, you know, 6-7 years ago. But he can still be an impact player. I feel like if you're looking at J.J. Watt or Corey Linsley, listen, Corey Linsley had a fantastic season. But I think they can replace Corey Linsley internally, to be quite frank. I think they've got the ability to be able to do that. both internally and through the draft, and not have to spend a lot of money to do that. I think they're probably going to do that anyway. I would rather let Corey Linsley get paid by someone else at this point. I am just going to be completely honest with you. The player I'm going to throw out there is, would you rather have J.J. Watt or Preston Smith? That's the number that I'm going to be paying attention to, because Preston Smith is getting paid $16 million a year. I don't think there's a high likelihood that the Packers are going to bring him back for a third year. They can designate him as a post-June 1st cut and save $12 million against the cap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's $12 million. Would you be willing, would you rather have, and I suppose that's not really a fair question, because you could say, well, you can cut Preston Smith, and that doesn't mean you have to sink all that money into J.J. Watt.
Right.
But just
right.
for the sake of, for the sake of argument, I think I would rather have J.J. Watt at $15 or $16 million next year than Preston Smith at $15 or $16 million next year. Is that a comparison that you can get on board with?
Well, that's a great way to frame it. If that's like a one for one situation, then absolutely. I think that J.J. Watt brings a different look. I think that Rashawn Gary's emergence in year two it proves that, you know, a front four, I'll just put it this way, front four of J.J. Watt, Kenny Clark, Za'Darius Smith, and Rashawn Gary should scare the heck out of the NFC North and the rest of the league. So if we're talking apples to apples, 100%, I think that that's something I could completely get on board with.
Fair enough. And again, I get that just because you cut Smith, and they might cut Smith anyway, that doesn't
right.
mean that you immediately fill that with J.J. Watt. It's just kind of thinking, and they're different positions, too. Obviously, Preston's an outside linebacker, and J.J. Watt's a defensive lineman. But it would be, you know, saliva-inducing to think about J.J. Watt next to Kenny Clark in the middle of that defensive line. Pretty scary, as you said, for the rest of the NFC North and even the NFC at large. To think about the Packers finally having some high impact players across that front, that would pose a lot of problems. So anyway, it's one of those discussions that I think seems to be pretty polarizing right now. There's a lot of folks out there saying no way, Packers don't have the money, we shouldn't be spending money on J.J. Watt. And then there's a lot of folks that are out there saying bring them in. I'm not necessarily interested in all due respect what all of our fellow fans think as much as what that front office wants to do, what their plan is. It's going to be interesting to see and watch how closely the Packers try to really make a run at J.J. because if they don't get him, that might be a harbinger of things to come once free agency opens in general, if the Packers have some other potential targets that they might make a run at to try to improve this defensive line.
Well, totally. And, you know, in talking about that, and, you know, we'll talk corners a separate time here, but this is a position group where the Packers have spent a ton of draft capital over the years. They've landed significantly with Jaire Alexander, but have had an awful lot of trouble with a lot of their other picks. And, you know, that's another one where, you know, when we're talking free agency, you know, do the Packers go, shoot, let's just fix this problem and spend some money on free agency at the corner position and then draft capital and defensive line? I don't know, right? We're just kind of prognosticating at this point anyway. But to your point, I mean, this is just fun to talk about, right? The fact that J.J. Watt at this stage in his career is a free agent and the dots are connecting and it actually makes sense and it's a need position. I'm not going to complain, Wiggs. I'll put it that way. If J.J. Watt comes to Green Bay, I'm going to be happy no matter what.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not going to be something that they're going to, well, I shouldn't say this, but I would not expect J.J. is going to be commanding a 4 or 5 year contract from anyone at this point.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. And if that's the case, you know, I don't expect the Packers to be, you know, competitive to be able to have a chance to bring J.J. in. We're looking more realistically at a much shorter contract at this point, mm-hmm. I think, for a guy like J.J. Watt. So in any event, it sounds like you and I are on board, but slightly different viewpoints on it. And so we are a good representation of the rest of the fan base on that discussion. So, Dane, anything else with the guys that we have on this defensive line? I mean, it's a group that I think, you know, I think you said it best. They were a very hardworking group. You know, it got the job done for the most part, but, you know, it made some improvements on it. But I really think that we're going to see some turnover with this group, and we're going to be bringing some new guys in, J.J. Watt or not. We're going to have some new faces as part of this group next year.
Yeah, I mean, the only guaranteed roster spot right now next year is Kenny Clark. After mm-hmm. that, there's going to be some opportunity for camp battles, and those are going to be a blast to watch. But you're right, and I think that we're going to see the Packers invest relatively heavily, actually, in this spot. I think that's one of those sticking points where Goody doesn't want to have to, you know, be going to the waiver wire every week again this year, looking to add help to the defensive line. So I think that this is a spot where they see a hole and they want to plug it, and, you know, I'm expecting them to do so.
All right, very good. So, folks, thanks so much for listening, following along. I think you previewed a little bit of the next group that we plan to talk about, which is that cornerback group. So we're just going to keep jumping around offense, defense, work our way through these positions, and just share some thoughts. So thanks for listening, and go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.